Untitled MMA Podcast. I felt like that was loud, but I'm going to let it roll. March 3rd, 2020, coming off UFC Norfolk, heading into UFC 248. Bryce is live and in color in the studio. Bryce, how's it feel?
Feels real good, man.
Hell yeah, brother.
I never know how much of a delay there is in my responses, and so now it's actually real time.
Yeah, there's a delay sometimes. It's very annoying. I'm Buju.
I am Brendan.
I'm still Bryce.
Did you forget the last half of your name there for a second?
I was going to say Brendanus.
Oh. like I said, we're coming off UFC Norfolk, which was headlined by Joseph Benavidez and Deveson Figueiredo, and a disappointing end to a half a title main event, half a championship main event.
What a strange situation.
And it turned out in the worst situation just by the outcome.
And Buju currently is wearing two sets of headphones. What a power move.
I think that was probably the worst possible outcome for the flyweight division. I don't know if it's a bad outcome for the UFC, because I don't know if they want the flyweight division around. But as far as the division itself goes, it's not good for the division.
Yeah, it's very bad. Like, I don't even... Is there still a champion? Or is it actually vacated?
It's vacant.
What a mess.
So, you have Figueiredo, who just beat the perennial top guy, and Figueiredo can't make the weight. Cejudo was the last champion. He's fighting Jose Aldo. Benavidez just lost. Who else do you even have in that division right now? Formiga has a loss to Figueiredo.
No, Formiga beat Figueiredo. He lost to Joseph Benavidez.
Oh, okay. Fucking Sergio's in Bellator now.
Yeah, Sergio Pettis got to be kicking himself because I feel like he's fighting. Is he fighting at flyweight in Bellator?
I don't know. It might be a bantamweight. But either way, the UFC flyweight division is fucked.
Yeah, it's not at all good. And also, my heart goes out to Joseph Benavidez. This was the chance.
0 for 3 in title shots.
Yeah.
I mean, that is his fault, though, so.
Huh? Yeah.
What?
It's his fault that he lost 3 times.
Oh, yeah, it is. I mean, the first 2 times he was against one of the greatest ever. And this time, I mean, he got caught.
I mean, I feel bad for Donald Cerrone and his being unlucky in title fights, but I don't really care about Benavidez whatsoever, so that's why.
It just sucks.
I said it's his fault. If it was somebody else that I cared about, I'd have a different opinion on it, but
I just think it's one of those. I mean, he lost twice to Demetrius and couldn't fight for the belt again while he was still in the UFC. Then he leaves, Cejudo wins the belt. A guy that he beat, and then he leaves the division, and then so it's like this is literally this was everything his career was really leading up to. This should have been the christening on the frosting on the cake, christening of his career.
The christening of the frosting on the cake.
Yes. It should have been all of that good stuff, and it wasn't because, I mean, Figueiredo couldn't make the weight and messed him up.
So the rankings haven't been updated yet, but right now you have Benavidez, Formiga, Figueiredo, Pantoja, Moreno, Askarov, France, Bontorin, Perez, and Schnell.
That's awful.
That's terrible.
That's so bad.
Brandon Moreno might be getting a little bit better. He's still kind of an unknown.
Pantoja, I know, was good from that year of Tough, where he's all champions.
But Kai Kara France is up and down. He's on a he lost one, then won one. Askarov drew with Moreno. I think he just took a loss. Figueiredo obviously just beat Benavidez. Formiga lost to Benavidez. This is a messy division right now, and I don't know what you do if the UFC. If you were the UFC, I think the ideal situation would be Cejudo versus Figueiredo, but Cejudo's fighting Aldo. So
Cejudo isn't fighting at 125 again, friend. Yeah, he had a lot of issues making that in his first time, like going up to the title. He missed weight like twice.
So I guess you have to do Figueiredo versus Formiga, but A, who gives a fuck about that fight? And B, what if Figueiredo misses weight again?
I don't know, friend. Cut him.
It's tough decision. Or do you do Benavidez versus Figueiredo again?
I'm okay with that. And say, make the weight, and maybe you can win a belt this time.
Why wouldn't you give it to Formiga if he just beat...
He's coming off of a loss to Benavidez.
That was his last fight?
Yeah.
So I feel like it would be reasonable to do Benavidez and him part two.
I don't mind.
Either way,
I'm just saying, like, someone has to fight for a belt, and it probably should include Figueiredo because he won a half title fight.
I don't
imagine if Anthony Pettis beat Max Holloway when he couldn't win that interim or was that that was an interim belt.
Yeah.
That would have been such a mess. Because then he would have fought Jose Aldo and missed weight again, probably. Ugh.
So Pantoja's last two fights was a loss to Figueiredo and a win over Matt Schnell.
That's not good.
It's such a shallow, like, what do you do? I just don't know. I guess Figueiredo versus fucking Benavidez again.
I'm okay with that, to be completely honest with you.
But I just don't care to see it again. Like,
I don't care about any flyweight fight.
That's fair enough. Cejudo versus Figueiredo might be the only one I'd give a fuck about right now.
Yeah, but again, I don't think Cejudo's going to fight at flyweight again.
I do feel like Benavidez won the first round, but Figueiredo just figured out his timing and put him down with a fucking easy straight shot right to the nose arena. So,
yeah.
I don't know. I don't know what you do if you're the UFC. I don't know what you do if you're a flyweight that's not Deveson Figueiredo right now.
You're looking for a new job, probably. Because, I mean, the UFC also can't just close down the division.
And it seemed like they were trying to, then gave up on that effort. But now it's the worst it's ever looked. So I cannot see another. I don't know. There's no good outcome to this.
100%.
So
I agree.
And so, it kind of sucks for Figueiredo, but also fuck him because he didn't make the weight.
And saying that, yeah. I don't really care what the next title fight would be because it's such a mess. I don't think there's one logical solution.
Yeah. Plus, I literally just don't care.
That too.
A division that kind of was in the same situation as flyweight, but flip-flopped a little bit on Saturday, is the women's featherweight division. Megan Anderson got a nice knockout win, and Felicia Spencer got a TKO win. So you, all of a sudden, you have two contenders in the women's featherweight division. You can question how legit they are, but they are two legitimate contenders who it makes sense to give those two a title shot, either of those two a title shot.
Yeah.
Personally, I think you give it to Megan Anderson. She faced a better opponent, and she knocked her out. But I can see the argument for Felicia Spencer, too, I guess. Doesn't Anderson have a win over Spencer, or is it vice versa?
I believe that is it. No, it's vice versa, because Felicia Spencer's only lost to Cyborg.
Okay. But did they fight? Am I thinking of the right people?
Probably not.
Megan Anderson. Oh. Anderson.
Oh.
Pulling it up.
Also, why does her name Megan when it's spelled Megan?
Australia. They do shit upside down there, Bryce. You know what I'm saying? She lost to Felicia Spencer, so I guess maybe you do Spencer. Right?
Yeah, why not?
So Felicia Spencer versus Amanda Nunes. How does that go?
I think we all know how that goes.
I feel like Anderson has the best shot against Nunes, though. So if...
Just stylistically and, like, yeah, lengthwise. I was about to say lengthwise, because she's a tall lady.
And Nunes just struggled with Jermaine Duran to me. I mean, she beat her 4-1, but relative to what we've seen from Amanda Nunes before, she struggled a little bit.
Agree. I think, though, that... I also feel like Jermaine Durandamy is a better striker because she was a kickboxing multiple-time world champion. And so I feel like she would knock out or finish Megan Anderson within the distance, obviously.
And I think the argument for Megan Anderson, too, would be that, like you mentioned length, but Nunes hasn't had to deal with somebody that lengthy before.
Yeah, 100%.
And whether that's even a problem for her, we don't know, just because she hasn't dealt with it before. I don't think Megan Anderson's that great, but to me... All things considered, I think if I'm the UFC, I'm giving Megan Anderson that title shot against Nunes.
Yep.
You just have to feed Nunes everybody that's in the division. She's going to tear everybody up, so.
Yeah.
You just gotta
You could do Anderson versus Spencer and the winner of that fight's Nunes.
Well, Nunes said she wants Dana White to pick her next opponent between those two, so.
Was the fight against Randy at 135 or 145?
35.
Okay. Yeah, so the next fight should be at 145, and it has to be one of those two. It's not going to be anybody else. Either way, I think it's going to be Amanda Nunes dominating somebody, but I thought she'd do it to Durandamy too, so I don't know. Could be wrong.
She probably finishes either one of them within two rounds.
Yeah.
That's very respectful.
I think Spencer more so than Anderson, but I could be wrong there too.
Yep.
And the only other really news is Dana White said he's not sure if Conor McGregor would be willing to wait for Khabib, assuming Khabib beats Tony. I think that's it's not concrete or anything. I just think that's an interesting way to put things, that Conor wouldn't be willing to wait for Khabib.
He's going to fight in, like, International Fight Week, probably.
Yeah, I think so, too. Just all signs are pointing to that, I think, assuming all goes well.
Yeah, with the contract negotiations.
Right. So does that mean it's going to be Gaethje?
Yeah, why not?
I feel like it has to be Gaethje.
Let's run it.
Who else would it be at that point, I guess? Because if it's going to be in July, it's not going to be Tony. because Tony's going to be coming off. That would be less than 3 months from the Khabib fight.
Mm-hmm.
He already fought Cowboy.
I do have a quick question.
Yeah.
Let's say for whatever reason Khabib loses to Tony.
Uh-huh.
Do you think Conor fights Khabib? Less like Khabib gets the belt again? Because I feel like he cares more about getting the belt than fighting Khabib.
I don't know. That's
I think he also cares a lot about fighting Khabib. So that's I'm very curious.
I think he cares more about avenging that loss than he does the belt personally.
I think he's 100% fighting Tony because he knows that's an easy win.
That is, yeah.
He just smells the blood.
I will also say that would also force Khabib's hand into fighting him again.
But do you think Conor McGregor cares about the? Not necessarily cares about it, but do you think he thinks that a fight with Khabib is significantly more difficult than Tony, or is it the mindset where they're all the same or whatever and the sake of competition and all that stuff?
I think he definitely recognizes Khabib as one of the best fighters in the world, and I definitely think he knows that Tony's chin is fucking ass.
So if that's the case, do you think Conor McGregor cares about easy fights?
He fought Cowboy.
Fair, but who else was he going to fight at that point?
I mean, you probably could have fought Justin Gaethje.
I don't even know how I can, like, I don't know what my opinion would be on that because I feel like it's contradictory because I obviously think he wants to fight Tony because he's an easy title match, but at the same time, I think he definitely wants to fight Khabib. So
I just think if the timeline could be, if it's a quick fight, because I feel like that'd be like one of the ways that Tony wins, just a quick flash knockout or submission. Mm-hmm. And he can get a quick turnaround. I could see him fighting Tony sometime around summer and then fighting Khabib at the end of the year for the belt because Khabib, I think, cares about the title more than anything. And that would force him to fight Conor if he holds that belt.
I also think Khabib's more worried about his legacy than the title, which the title obviously is a huge part of the legacy.
Yeah.
Or actually, I mean, if Tony loses, he might want to fight. Or if Khabib loses to Tony, he might want to fight Tony again to avenge that loss.
What does that do to Khabib's legacy if he loses to Tony?
It just depends on the way that he does. And also if he fights him again.
He's no longer a top two fighter ever.
I think he's top two.
But if he retires relatively soon, I think that automatically puts him in the argument of at least top five.
Yeah.
So assume he beats Tony, say he goes and beats Conor again, then maybe wins one more fight. Is he in the greatest of all time discussion?
Oh, yes.
Oh, yeah.
Now, if he loses to Tony, and then goes and fights Conor, maybe wins that, and then fights somebody else and gets that win, is he in that discussion?
Yeah.
Having lost to Tony.
Yeah, I think no matter what, unless he loses like two or three, he's in the discussion. Especially, and he has a much better argument if he retires undefeated.
What's the most likely way he loses to Tony? If Tony wins, what's the most likely way he beats Khabib, I should say? Submission, right?
Either submission or like a flash knockout.
I just don't see Tony Ferguson knocking somebody out. Maybe that's
I don't see him knock him out either.
I also didn't think that Deiveson Figueiredo could knock anybody out. Anyone can land the shot.
Yeah.
Against anybody.
My absurd take is decision.
You think that's the most likely way he would beat
yeah.
him?
Yeah. Or submission. I feel like it's like a 50-50. Just because his gas tank and his ability to stay on the ground.
I don't know if it's that crazy because we do know how good Tony Ferguson's gas tank is. It's just,
have we ever seen Khabib put so much pressure in the championship rounds?
No. Ally Aquinta was garbage.
And
I think that was the only fight he had. What about
Poirier, though?
Well, I thought that fight ended in the second or third.
Yeah. So that's a question mark. We don't know.
The thing is that Khabib's style is a style that wears out his opponent. Bryce is laying very seductively. I can't say that word. But, Khabib's style is one that wears out his opponent. So if Khabib goes in there and fights Khabib's fight for those first three rounds, it might not matter how much gas Tony typically has or how much Khabib has left in the tank. Because if Khabib can grab him and drag him to the ground, then the gas tank doesn't matter that much.
Yeah.
Especially for Khabib.
Yeah, I agree. I also, I really want to see it go to the ground because I want to see how those two compare. Because, I mean, Khabib's style is I'm going to control your arm one way or another, get you to that position, and then I'm going to punch your face in. where Tony has some of the slickest jiu-jitsu at 155.
Right.
Possibly in the entire organization.
That's almost the way I see it ending, is Khabib does get it to the ground, Tony's on bottom, and Khabib's trying to do his smash thing that he does.
Mm-hmm.
He's trying to dominate from the top, and he gets himself caught in a submission. Maybe he's too good for that, I don't know. We just haven't had him. We haven't seen him have to deal with somebody. And Tony is top three probably in MMA in grappling, so it's hard to... you don't run across that very often. But I would like to see that tested for Khabib before we really gauge his overall game, you know what I mean? Just because we haven't seen him deal with that from anybody.
You think as we get closer to the build-up of the fight, Tony's going to start talking more trash? He seems like he's more of a trash-talking type, but I don't see any
I mean, Tony's trash talk is like
goofy. Weird.
Hashtag champ shit only. Hashtag punch wood. Ooh.
Tony's the... And this is the fucking beginning of the meme, but that's not where I'm going with it. Tony's the kind of guy who capitalizes every word in... when he tweets.
Yeah.
And I think that tells you everything you need to know about him, man.
Yeah. He's a goofball. But I don't think his trash talk would be anywhere to the point where it would affect Khabib's thought process about him. Like, this is a guy that he respects.
It's going to be like, this Khabib guy, he's goofy. Champ shit only.
Because I honestly think the more you talk trash to Khabib, the worse the situation gets. I feel like it just builds the motivation.
Was it him that called Conor McGregor McNugget, or was that Max Holloway?
That was Tony.
I got those two mixed up a lot back in the day when they were both coming up at the same time.
Right.
They were the same guy to me.
To be fair, they also have the angel tattoos.
Mm-hmm. They're both kind of built the same.
Yeah.
Like, lanky, wiry type of guys.
Uh-huh.
They're both kind of weirdos.
Wiry.
Yep.
I like the word.
Wiry?
Wiry.
Do you think that's an accurate description of Tony Ferguson and Max Holloway? That's, wiry?
I think more so Tony, but... I don't know why more so Tony. I think he's more bony.
I would say Max is more wiry.
Yeah. They're both...
I don't even know what it means.
Also, if like two would walk up to you, you probably wouldn't think that they're wiry, but compared to other professional fighters, they're about as wiry as they come.
Hell yeah. Do any of us know what wiry means?
It's like a skinny, frail, winky. Skinny, frail dude.
Okay. And also, just like
a wire. Kind of thing. Wire for arms.
I was picturing like
electric.
Like meth energy, basically.
What?
Like tweaking.
I still think that points towards Ferguson more than...
Yeah, probably.
Yeah, that 100%. Especially when he tweets and capitalizes every individual word.
He literally does that? He literally does that.
Does he do that?
I'm pretty sure.
Hell yeah.
I thought Buju was just giving a random-ass example.
But it sounded like a real thing when I
feel like that might... There's a fighter I know that does it, and I don't see all that many fighters' tweets on the regular. It's most likely him.
Fighters' social media games are not that great. And that's why the ones that are good at it are so beloved, because in general, fighter social media is not great.
Yeah,
and that's kind of true for sports in general, almost. But
yeah,
And when you're in an individual sport, I think you need to make yourself stand out, and social media is such a fucking easy way to do it. And that's why people like fucking shitty Elias Theodoro, because he was halfway decent at social media. Excuse me, I'm burping here. What else we have to talk about? What's some general MMA thoughts?
I did just get a notification that says Paul Felder does expect to fight again.
Yeah.
He says, I'm only coming back for things that really entice me, when asked if he has fought for the last time of the
UFC. So he's basically in the I'm not going to be champion mode. It's time to just have some fun.
He's in the Anthony Pettis stage.
Right.
I haven't fought Anthony Pettis.
They're teammates, though. They're both Rufus sport guys.
That's terrible. I hate it when that happens.
And he's friends with Cowboy, so that takes away the two, like, who gives a fuck fights right there.
Right.
But they'd both be fun. I'd like to see Pettis versus Cerrone while we're on that topic, I guess.
Yeah,
it's happened before, but, I mean, why not do it again? It doesn't matter. Like, there's no title consequences
there. I might pick Cowboy
in
that
fight. It's a fun fight. So, I'd say do that.
Yeah, it'd be fun.
Who'd you pick in that fight, just off the top of your dome piece? Let's say they fight at 170.
It's Cerrone.
Really?
Cerrone's a better fighter.
I disagree.
I said I was picking Cerrone before I asked. So,
but I mean, obviously, when the time comes.
Yeah, I know what. That's why I'm asking you now. So we actually know your true thoughts.
It's just such an easy game plan to beat Cowboy, but then again,
I mean, it's such an easy game plan to beat Pettis too.
Pettis is the worst game planner of all time.
Yeah.
So
the only way Pettis wins is knockout. I don't think he wins via this decision.
He could definitely
body kicks to fucking death.
Yeah.
If I stepped in the cage with Cerrone right now. That's all I'm doing is trying to fucking hit his ass with body kicks.
If I had
fucked up in the process.
If I had to predict it, I think Cerrone wins the first and third. Random prediction.
Mm-hmm.
That would be a great ESPN main event.
It would.
If it was scheduled, I feel like ESPN main event would be the way to go.
Yeah.
Or at the very least, an ESPN co-main event.
100%. Or a prelim co-main event before a big pay-per-view.
Nah, I think it's too big for a prelim main event.
Well, I'm just saying that's on ESPN, though.
Yeah. I'm just trying to fill time here. We're only at 20 minutes. We're out of shit to talk about. So.
Man, that's tough.
Now that we're only 6 weeks away from Ferguson versus Khabib, are we actually believing this is going to happen now?
I think it will happen.
Yeah, I don't. It just feels different this time for some reason. I don't know why. Maybe I said that same thing last time.
You probably did. To me, I just don't feel that. I think all of their past issues are behind them. I hope that the UFC tapes down any wires in the area of Tony Ferguson, and that, I mean, Khabib has fought multiple times since the last time he had to pull out against Ferguson. So,
and it also feels like everybody's kind of like subconsciously not mentioning the fact that this fight usually gets canceled, and yeah, that we're 6 weeks away, nothing's happened yet, we don't want anything to happen. Nobody's talking about that, even though this is the fifth time we've attempted to book this fight.
Exactly. Like you said, it does feel different, and I think that it will actually happen.
If one of them were to drop out, do you think Conor McGregor steps in and fills that spot?
I want to say yes, but I don't know if he wants to get in to a fight camp and potentially cut for a fight that he may not have to do.
Right.
Especially if he has a fight, if he wants to fight in the summer.
Exactly, because he doesn't like to cut weight. That's why he's fighting at 170 against 55ers.
But it might be at a catchweight, though. Like, I don't know.
You can't have a title fight at a catchweight,
yeah, Conor McGregor cutting to 155. Because that was, that, like, Dana almost said that he was going to be the backup, and Conor was talking about being the backup. But having the most, one of the most famous athletes in the world, and definitely the most famous guy in the UFC, just having him cut to 155 for probably no reason, I don't know if that's going to happen. That's a wild move.
I don't think so. I think that they would have, I don't know, Justin Gaethje or somebody. Or even then, if he's going to fight International Fight Week, like, I truly don't know who it might be.
Dan Hooker? But that would be relatively short notice. But now, he can't be Dan Hooker. He just came off a fucking five-round war with Paul Felder. So it can't be Cerrone. It's not going to be Felder. Poirier? Kevin Lee? Poirier or Kevin Lee?
I mean, Kevin Lee's ranked 8, and I mean, Poirier's number 2.
Poirier wants to fight Hooker. I don't know if we mentioned that, but that would be really fun, I think.
Yeah, we did not, and that would be a lot of fun. You can put that as an ESPN main event, too.
Lightweight kicks so much ass.
It's so great.
Nurmagomedov, Ferguson, Poirier, McGregor, Gaethje, Hooker, Cerrone, Felder, Lee, Iaquinta, Barboza, Fajeda, Gillespie, Oliveira, Makhachev, Hernandez. Wow. That's the division, boys and girls.
I feel like we say this very often.
I know, but what a division.
A lot of UFC divisions, though, I feel like, a lot better than they were this time like 2 years ago.
But as good of a division as it is, when you look down, it's like maybe 2 to 3 of these guys even have a snowball's chance in hell against Khabib.
Yeah. That just is the stylistic comparison against Khabib.
And the thing is, if Ferguson beats Khabib, like, that doesn't matter too much because Khabib's definitely getting a rematch. They're definitely running that back. So yeah. Ferguson has to beat Khabib twice to be the champion, really.
Yeah.
Which sucks for Tony.
I don't think that'll happen.
I feel like that'd be great for the division.
If Ferguson wins. If he beats him
twice, Khabib goes to the Shadow Realm. Goes back to Russia forever.
But at the same time, I'm saying this now, but if Ferguson beats Khabib twice, then I'm going to start thinking that Ferguson's unbeatable.
Yeah. I mean, that's the cycle.
Yeah, it is.
We thought Conor McGregor was unbeatable, and then he lost in 8. We thought Ronda Rousey was unbeatable.
Yeah. Although, I don't think that Tony is unbeatable in any sense of the word. Even if he beats Khabib, as of now, I can't see a world where I would think he's unbeatable.
He's been around for so long, and we've seen his flaws. Mm-hmm. We know that he's got a questionable chin. Honestly, that's kind of it.
Yeah, that is it.
And that's when Conor capitalizes and beats him.
But when you're in a division with Conor McGregor and Justin Gaethje and Dan Hooker and
Poirier,
Kevin Lee and Edson Barboza, those are hard hitters, and if you had a weak chin, you could get in trouble with those guys.
100%.
When those guys are standing in front of you.
Mm-hmm.
What else we got here? I'm just looking at rankings. Do we want to get into picks and see if something comes up?
Yeah, sure.
This is a very good card, so maybe this will kill some time here. I think this is one of the better pay-per-view cards in a while, it feels like.
Yeah.
Top to bottom. Well, I mean, not top. Top to the seventh fight, maybe. We're picking six fights from UFC 248, the entire main card, plus the prelim main event. I think they're all good fights. I'm interested in all of these. I think one kind of stands out as the weak link, but they're all fairly fun, I think. The first fight we're picking, Sugar Sean O'Malley, is a minus 270 favorite against Jose. Bryce, help me out here. Jose?
Quiñones.
Quiñones.
Yeah.
How about that accent there, huh? Fucking nailed it.
It's all right.
O'Malley versus Quiñones, minus 270 against plus 210. I think it's a pretty easy pick here. I think Quiñones is a fairly straightforward, generic, cut from a fucking cloth MMA fighter. That's kind of the guy that's... type of guys the UFC gives their prospects when they're trying to build them up. I think it's no secret the UFC expects a lot of O'Malley, and he's looked very good in the opportunities he's had so far. I think I don't see any reason that doesn't continue here, and I think Sean O'Malley shows out and gets a big win against Jose Quiñones in his return.
I'm going to go with the favorite, Sugar Sean O'Malley against Jose Quiñones. I'm not good at pronunciations either.
You did good.
Didn't even pronounce pronunciations correct.
Yeah.
How did I say it?
Pronunciations.
Oh. Pronounce, same thing. But either way, it can be Sugar Sean.
Yep, that's the move.
Sugar Pour Sean. Some sugar on me, as they say. Right, Bryce? Yes, sir! Well, that was still really loud. Alex Oliveira is a minus 150 favorite. Alex Cowboy Oliveira, the minus 150 favorite against Max Griffin, plus 120 underdog. Alex Cowboy Oliveira, the most important stat in UFC history, has four kids with four different women who all live on the same street. Two of them were born in the same hospital on the same day. That is the most important statistic in the history of mixed martial arts and maybe all of sports.
Yeah, I agree. I can't think of a single statistic that matters more.
Max Griffin's resume is trash, and he doesn't have four kids with four women who live on the same street. So I have to pick Alex Cowboy Oliveira here. I think he's just a general, overall better fighter. He underperforms a lot in spots, so that kind of concerns me. But I do think he should be a bigger than a minus 150 underdog here. I think he's a significantly better fighter than Griffin, and Griffin's resume is trash, so I'm surprised the odds are as close as they are.
That was my initial thought, that the odds were too close. Just looking at it, just briefly looking at the names, obviously, I know Oliveira fought a lot more times, seen him fought a lot more times, so I just thought the odds would be farther than what they were, but then I looked at the resumes, and it's crazy that Oliveira's on a three-fight losing streak, but that's not going to affect my pick. I'm going to go with, almost said Sugar Sean, I'm going to go with Charles Oliveira.
Before Bryce it's makes
Alex,
his-
not Charles.
Or same guy.
Before Bryce Alex. Makes his pick, I almost guarantee Max Griffin's nickname is Payne, and it is Max Payne Griffin.
Oh, that's awful.
But how do
that's
you?
As
that's just come
cookie
on.
Cutter as it gets in MMA. I'm also going to go with Alex Oliveira here. I think that he is a guy that should. He has the talent to be a contender at 155 and at 170 if he could put it together.
Do you think
on a consistent basis?
Do you think it's almost him not taking it seriously enough? He seems like a guy that wouldn't almost.
Yeah,
he and maybe does. That's fair to like put that on him, but I don't know, the way he carries himself, kind of the way he fights sometimes.
He has all-time best walkout song, I mean.
The fact that he has four kids with four different women who live on the same street, it's just like, that's not a guy who's taking his career as serious as possible. You know what I mean?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, I don't think he has the hunger motivation of the Conor McGregors of the world.
Yeah.
Yeah, he has a lot of. He has some of the most talent, though, in those two divisions.
Yeah,
just raw talent.
And he's good at everything.
He is.
And it's confusing as to why he's not better in better placement than he is.
He is also horrible at game planning. And yeah. Also, adjustments mid fight, if you can figure him out early, I can't think of many times where he's been able to adapt in a fight.
But I think being a bad game planner is a characteristic of somebody who's not taking it seriously enough.
Yeah, I agree. I agree with all of those points, and I'm just giving further evidence
right.
to support your claim, friend.
Make a pick?
Yeah, Alex Oliveira.
I don't know. Neil Magny's a plus 145 underdog against Li Jing Lang, the minus 175 favorite. These are more odds I'm surprised at here. Li Jing Lang is a very exciting striker. I think he's arguably one of the more exciting guys in the UFC. You know you're going to get something flashy when Li Jing Lang is in there. Neil Magny is another guy who I feel like underperforms a lot. And if he can't immediately get you to the ground and use his grappling, he puts himself in trouble because he doesn't really know how to adapt to other situations. He's not a terrible striker. There are grapplers who are much, much worse strikers than Neil Magny, but he just panics when he can't get you into his game plan. That being said, I do feel like Neil Magny has an advantage here, despite him being the underdog. It's just a stylistic matchup. It's grappler versus striker. But if that striker can stop the grappler's grappling, then who knows? But
because you start every round and every fight on the feet.
Amen, sister. But yeah, I'm going to pick Neil Magny here. It's a little bit of a risk because how he performs and how much he can panic when he gets taken out of his game plan. But I feel like style to style, Neil Magny's the smart pick here for me.
Just out of curiosity, every fight starts on the feet, but I feel like if you guys had one main thing that you guys used in fighting, I could have swore you guys said wrestling.
It is, we're just saying, in order to use your wrestling, you do have to get it to the ground, and you don't start on the ground, you have to get it there.
It just sounds contradictory, doesn't it?
I mean, it's a fact that you start every round on your feet, but...
But you're using that as the argument to back up the striker opposed to the ground.
I didn't make my argument yet, and you'll hear it, friend.
What that saying means is the round starts with a very, very, very slight advantage to the striker.
Yeah.
Either way, advantage, striker.
I mean, not either way.
No.
I mean, look at Khabib.
You're saying a striker?
Look at Khabib against Conor McGregor. Conor McGregor is the better striker.
All right, let's come back to this. Let's finish our picks and we'll come back to this. This is a nice topic to come back to.
Make a pick.
That's weird. Okay. Li Jinglang. I'm going to pick him. He's the favorite. He has two TKOs in a row.
Two taquitos in a row.
He's on a 3-fight win streak. Give me that guy.
I'm also going to go with Li Jinglang because looking at Neil Magny's resume, he was in the talks for a title fight a little while back.
He went on a long win streak, didn't he?
I mean, he had a... When he came into the UFC, he did like in 2015. Mm-hmm. Then he lost to Damian Maia. Got 3 wins in a row against Eric Silva, Kelvin Gastelum, and Hector Lombard. Lost to Lorenz Larkin, beat Johnny Hendricks. After Johnny Hendricks was Johnny Hendricks. Lost to RDA at 170, then beat Carlos Condit and Craig White. And then he's coming off of a loss against Santiago Ponzinibbio. So, I mean...
You fought Johnny Hendricks twice?
No.
Oh.
I said Ponzinibbio, Craig White, Carlos Condit.
I thought you said something about after Johnny Hendricks was Johnny
it Hendricks. Was, because it was after he had started his downfall.
Oh,
because he's a totally different fighter.
And that was also Carlos Condit after he fought for the title as well, too, I think.
Yeah, this is bum Condit.
Yeah.
So, I mean, he doesn't have any impressive wins lately. Li Jinglang is a very flashy striker, and, I mean, he's gotten the job done. He's got 3 wins in a row, 2 knockouts in a row. I think he's going to get it done this weekend.
Get it done and get a one. Benil Dariush is a minus 165 favorite against Dracar Close, the plus 135 underdog. I wanted to pick Dracar Close in this one. I just feel like Dariush is a little bit better of a fighter. I think Close has had some fairly impressive performances. I think for as much as Neil Magny has underperformed, I think Dracar Close has overperformed at times. But Dariush feels like he's right in the middle of that division where you have to get through Dariush to get to the top of the division.
Do you want
to
say the word?
Nope, and he's tough to get through. So I don't know if Dracar Close can get through there, and I'm going to pick Benil Dariush as the favorite in this one.
I have Benil Dariush as well. I just think he's going to take it to the ground. Hold Bakel?
Dracar.
Bakel.
I think you mixed Benil and Dracar together there.
But, yeah, I think he's just going to hold him to the ground, keep it there, and he'll be effective enough to win him a decision. Or maybe even submit him, but that's my pick.
Or maybe knock him out.
Yeah.
Could be a draw. Might win by DQ. Dr. Stoppage. Who knows?
Go fuck yourself.
I am going to go with Dracar Close here.
Hell yeah. I thought that was it.
We saw him fight live.
Hold on. I have to ask the question. Is that the guy with the Michigan tattoo?
It is.
Because
I was asking myself that same question. So we saw him fight in Michigan on the Holloway Aldo 2 card. And since then, he's got 3 W's in a row. Lando Venata, Bobby Green, and Christos Giagos.
Hell yeah. Known killer, Christos Giagos.
Oh, yeah. But it just seems like that's his only professional loss against David Tamer. He's also beaten some pretty good guys. I mean, up-and-coming guys. It's hard to say who's actually all that good because he hasn't fought the best names. Because he hasn't been able to have those opportunities. He seems like a guy that's coming into his own. At this point, I mean, he's 31, so he's reaching his fight prime. And, I mean, Dariush already is he's like 32, but it just seems like he's been around so much longer. And his last three fights were against Thiago Moises, Drew Dober, and Frank Camacho. I mean, these are also not the best of names either. So I think that Jakar Close going to get a slight upset.
Frank Camacho sounds like the third guy you fight in UFC 3.
Yeah, it does.
Weili Zhang is the women's strawweight champion of the world and the minus 150 favorite against the former women's strawweight champion of the world, Joanna Jędrzejczyk, the plus 120 underdog here. It's no secret that Joanna Jędrzejczyk is my first or second favorite fighter in the world. Love Joanna Jędrzejczyk to death. She's the queen of violence. She was the baddest bitch on the planet for quite a while, and then Rose Namajunas happened. Set herself back a little bit, had to rebuild, but I think based on her last performance, I think Joanna Jędrzejczyk is as good as she's ever been. Weili Zhang definitely has some impressive wins. Jessica Andrade, Tisha Torres. But it's hard to pick somebody who's beaten everybody except one person and looked excellent doing so. I have to pick Joanna Jędrzejczyk here. There's probably a little bias in there. What?
Two people. She lost to Valentina as well.
Oh, we don't talk about that. Yeah, I have to pick Joanna Jędrzejczyk here. Like I said, there's a little bias, but I do feel like when she's on, it's hard to beat Joanna Jędrzejczyk. If Weili Zhang can hold on to Joanna a little bit and take her out of her lightning quick strikes that Joanna will kill anybody with, then she's in trouble. But all, I think everything we've seen in the past for me leans it towards an advantage for Jędrzejczyk. So that's who I'm picking. I'm picking my girl Joanna.
I've Joanna as well. Just, I don't even really have an explanation why. Just I've seen Joanna fight more than I have seen Zhang, so I just know how good of a fighter Joanna is compared to Zhang, just relying on my experience with this fighter. And I also think it's time for her to come back. I don't think these are one of the situations where the game has just caught up to her or passed her up. I think this is her time to come back. I definitely don't think she'll stay as a champion, but it's her time to return.
This is only Zhang's fifth fight in UFC, I think. That's a part of it, too.
Yeah. Zhang, I mean, she was in the UFC for 1 year and 27 days before she claimed the throne.
That's crazy.
That is. I mean, that's like some meteoric rise type of stuff, partially because it's a fairly weak division.
But it's not
and
really,
good
though.
Time, and is also, I think, good timing.
Yeah.
Because they were fighting in Beijing. I don't think she would have gotten that shot if they weren't.
I don't know if it's a weak division, though. Rose, you got Andrade, Joanna, Gedalia, Torres, Aguilar, I already said Andrade, but that was a pretty good division. I think that is probably the best women's division, yeah?
Yeah, that and 135 I think are very comparable.
I don't know. I think 115 is better, but go ahead.
Either way, though, I mean, a couple of those names that you listed of fighters, some of them were not fighting very well at the point.
Yeah.
Rose Namajunas was indefinitely out of the picture for a while, and so she kind of, I don't want to say lucked into her way into a title shot, but, I mean, it was fairly lucky that she was able to.
Yeah. The cards fell her way.
Exactly.
She got the lucky bounces.
Yeah. And, I mean, she made the most of it, knocking out Jessica Andrade in, like, a minute.
Champion of the world.
But with that being said, I just haven't seen enough of her to pick her against a very proven product in Joanna Jędrzejczyk. Like you said, when she's on, she's hard to beat. And I think, I mean, it's definitely possible that Zhang could beat her because Rose Namajunas did it twice. And I think that she probably could. I think her best route is by finish, one way or another. But I just don't know if it can happen. I'm going to go with Joanna here to take back the belt.
So I have 2.5 questions here about this fight.
All right.
Question number one, do you feel like Zhang is a proven commodity?
A proven product?
Proven commodity. It's definitely the word I'm looking for here. Well, now you're making me question it.
Well,
now
like,
I have to look up the definition.
I'm just thinking of a business definition of a commodity. That's like a dime a dozen, doesn't really matter, run in the mill type of thing.
Do you think she has proven her worth in the division, I guess, is what I'm trying to say.
I mean, she's beaten a number of
Andrade, Torres, Aguilar, and Danielle Taylor are her four wins in the UFC.
Yeah, but, I mean, three of those are very good. Danielle Taylor is also a fairly good debut fight.
Yeah.
And she's got two of the tougher fights, she's got finishes in the first round, in Aguilar and Andrade. She does not lose at Jessica's, by the way.
defeated against Jessica's.
That should be noted. But I think that it's hard to say whether or not someone's proven, because, like, was Israel Adesanya proven when he fought Kelvin Gastelum for the interim belt?
No. And that's not even really what I'm asking. It doesn't really matter if she is or not. I'm just saying right now, is she a proven commodity or whatever you want to say?
Well, I've only seen her fight once, and so
that's a,
and that's 42 seconds.
And that's just my point is, like, the fact that she's in a title fight, this is her second title, her first title defense against a woman who at one time was probably the pound-for-pound top women's fighter in the world and undeniably one of the scariest fighters in the UFC. That's the fight she's in now, and it's kind of like, yeah, she's the champ, but what is she? You know what I mean?
Yeah,
it's 100%. It's crazy that that's the spot that she's in, all things considered.
Yeah, I agree, and that's partially why I went with Joanna.
But if she beats Joanna, then she's undeniably one of the best women's fighters in the world. There's no question.
Yep,
probably I agree.
Third. What was the second question? Oh, if Joanna and Rose were to fight again, who are you picking?
Ask me after Saturday.
Right now, you have to make a pick. Joanna versus Rose.
Rose. Again. Rose has got her number.
Rose.
I disagree. I don't know. Even when
Joanna was at her best in that second fight, she looked as good as Joanna ever has, and she lost. Clearly.
Fair enough. And maybe it's I underrate Rose because maybe it's just, I don't know, the style she fights or what, because
it's wonky.
She was beating Andrade, who I picked to beat Rose as well. I don't know. I think I just underrate Rose a lot, but yeah. If that fight were scheduled right now, I'd pick Joanna, even though she's lost to her twice. And yeah. I picked Rose in the second fight, I believe. I don't know. Main event of the evening.
Definitely had a feeling.
Yeah, right before the fight started, I was not feeling great about that. Israel Adesanya is a minus 270 favorite, the champion, the middleweight champion. The minus 270 favorite against Yoel Romero, the plus 210 underdog. Yoel Romero probably not the rightful contender here, probably not the rightful title challenger, but he is the title challenger, and Israel Adesanya has to deal with that problem now. And Yoel Romero, when he's at his best, is most certainly a problem. Olympic wrestler, elite striker, great striker in the middleweight division, can knock anybody out. He's the definition of explosive. I think that's a very overused term in MMA, but when you look that up in the dictionary, I think Yoel Romero's picture is right there.
Yeah, him hitting Chris Weidman with that knee should be the picture for explosive.
But I think we've seen the best of Yoel Romero. I think he's finally starting to get old after probably 7 years too late, about 4 or 5 years after everybody else does.
Yeah.
But I feel like we're finally seeing Yoel Romero to start to age. And Israel Adesanya, I feel like it just keeps going up and up and up and keeps getting better and better and better. So I feel like we got Israel Adesanya passing Yoel Romero as Yoel Romero is going down the hill and Israel Adesanya is coming up. I think Israel has another show-out performance and gets a very, very impressive knockout win over Yoel Romero in this main event.
I have Israel as well. I just think he's a better overall fighter. Yoel lacking the ability to finish fights is what causes him not to be, or is what is the reason why he's not a champion or has ever been a champion. And I think that's going to be a factor in this fight. I think he might catch Israel, whether it's like devastating or not. I just think his lack of instinct to be killer is going to be a big factor in this fight, and that's why I am going with Israel Adesanya.
I'm also going to go with Israel Adesanya here.
Why so somber?
If we talk about this literally, I think every single time.
I mean, you have to mention just because it's such a factor.
About Yoel Romero?
Being a wrestler.
Yeah. I love how you literally knew what I was going to say. Uh-huh. I didn't even say who we were talking about.
Yeah.
And I saw an ESPN article saying Israel Adesanya has the distance boxing advantage, kickboxing advantage, but Yoel is an Olympic silver medalist who has the true edge.
But the thing is,
Romero does not use his wrestling.
Yeah, he is a wrestler. He's an Olympic wrestler. He's probably one of the best wrestlers in the UFC. But at this point, he's just not a wrestler because he doesn't wrestle.
Yeah.
I mean, you have to talk about it because he possesses the skill, but all signs point to him not using it. So it's almost not even part of the discussion. It is, but it isn't. It has to be because it is there. But it's not going to happen, so why are we talking about it at the same time?
Brendan, your thoughts on Yoel Romero again.
I want to rephrase what I said, because I said like devastating punch or whatever. I definitely don't think he's going to put Israel into trouble to where it seems like, oh my God, he's about to finish him.
That's going to be a question I asked, too.
But at the same time, what I was trying to say was that even if he lands a punch that just like slightly rocks him, where he's a little wobbly, deer in the headlights almost type of situation, even anything relatively close to that, I just don't think he will have anything within them to finish the fight or to just continue to apply pressure to further the situation that is bad for Israel.
Mm-hmm. When I think about Yoel Romero, obviously you think about those moments when he's almost won the title, when he's rocked Robert Whittaker, when he, I mean, twice, and I mean, three or four times probably between their two fights. I think of him more as an explosive counter striker because it seems to me, and I'm not 100% sure, that it's when he's getting pressured and he's getting put into a bad spot where he just does some explosive thing and then his opponent is so wobbly for 45 seconds that he does nothing with it.
Yeah. Or shoots for a takedown.
Yeah. Finally uses his wrestling. I think that he can definitely land a shot like that against Israel Adesanya, but after the Paulo Costa fight, I think I have seen what Yoel Romero has left in MMA, and it is not to the level that Israel Adesanya is right now.
To me, Paulo Costa is, you take Israel Adesanya, you make him shorter, you turn down the technique, and turn up the power a little bit. And if he couldn't do it against Costa, I don't think there's a chance in hell he can do it against Adesanya.
Yeah, I agree. Yeah, so that's why I'm going to go with Adesanya. I think that also, Adesanya, he has done so well with marketing himself in this whole run that he's had.
Mm-hmm.
He's got to be one of the bigger draws in the UFC, right? Top
10,
I would say.
Yeah,
I was going to say like
at
top
the bottom
8.
Of the top 10, yeah. So knowing what we know about both of them at this point, do you think this is Israel's toughest test yet?
No.
I don't think it is.
No, I think Robert Whittaker was, and he dispatched him easily.
And I think Kelvin might be ahead of where Yoel Romero's at right now.
Yeah, possibly. I think that was more so stylistic, but
yeah. And because Israel was a little more unproven at that point too. Kelvin was the best fighter he'd fought at that point, so it was a question of can Israel do it against a guy like Kelvin?
Mm-hmm.
And now that you got to this point, to me, Yoel's the third toughest test. Third toughest test he's faced.
You still messed it up.
In my personal opinion, I just think it would be the second. I think it would be ahead of Gaslam.
Yeah, that's crazy.
Because Gaslam, I think, fought probably the best possible fight he could fight, and Israel is only getting better. So,
and Yoel's a better overall fighter than Kelvin Gaslam. It's just, I feel like his skills are diminishing at this point.
You're going to act like you just didn't toot for a good 6 seconds?
Well,
there?
The microphone didn't pick it up, so I wasn't going to acknowledge it. But hey, sometimes you got to do what you got to do.
I was in awe of just staring at you, just going on like there's nothing going out of your butthole right
there. I couldn't hear it, so I didn't know if anybody else could.
And I also think you lifted up your leg and directed it towards me.
Well, I can't. There's a lot of fucking shit going on down here. I just can't let it. I can't fire it off in the chamber. I gotta vent it a little bit. Bryce is dying over there.
Respect.
So back to Israel Adesanya and Yoel Romero. Do you think Israel gets tested in this fight? Do you think Yoel drags him into deep water at all?
I think he could land that shot that I was talking about, but I think that that's his only thing, and he has to do it before he gets finished. I do think, though, that the way that Israel fights, it lends to a greater chance of Yoel getting into that his most dangerous positions. Will he explode for the knee, explode for the straight right?
Right.
I think he's going to land at least one or two strikes that, like, put a question mark to, like, can he finish him? Not like, I don't know how to word it, because I don't think he is going to be like, can he finish? Like, just a rock.
Mm-hmm.
But I also think that Israel's feet and head movement are too good just for
his movement
for him to get
so
knocked
good.
Out.
Mm-hmm. You're going to be here for this one, right?
Yeah.
Hell yeah.
So let's say he does get rocked. I think he's going to back away until he can't back away no more. And his head movement's going to be good enough so he can recover.
So do you have anything else?
No.
Okay. Jumping back to the wrestler versus striker thing. Do you think a striker has an advantage over a wrestler?
That's not my argument. Okay. My argument, what I was trying to say is, by what you said, it seemed like you were supporting the argument of striker over wrestler, and you backed up that argument through saying the fighter or the fight start.
No, he was giving an argument for the striker when he said that.
Yeah.
That's what I'm saying.
Yeah.
He picked the wrestler. I picked the striker.
Oh, I thought you picked the striker.
No.
No, he picked Dariush. This was in regards to the Li Jing Lang Dariush fight.
Okay. Fair enough.
Yeah.
All right. That settles that.
Yeah, it does. That's a lot easier than I thought it was going to be.
This is what a pay-per-view should look like. It's not among the best we've ever seen.
But this is exactly the type of level of competition.
Yeah. You have an awesome main event. You have a really good, if not awesome, co-main event. And then three really good, not three at least interesting and intriguing fights on the pay-per-view card. That's all I want. If you give me two really good, really great fights and three that I'm at least interested in, I'm fucking happier than a pig and shit.
Yeah.
You sound happy. But having two title fights in one card typically ends up being a great card.
Yeah, unless it's a flyweight and a fucking women's featherweight fight or something.
Or women's flyweight.
And then having a prospect in the prelim main event, chef's kiss. Mwah.
Mwah. What was the second one? There's no kiss there.
Mwah. You're going to do the MMA plugs for Bryce?
Sure.
So MMA plugs. It's just the plugs.
Yeah, it is just the plugs. If you like this, give us a shout out on social media. You can like, follow us on social media. It's at Untitled MMA. We're on Twitter, Instagram, and Facebook. Facebook.com/UntitledMMA. If you shoot us a question or anything like that, we can answer it on next week's podcast. We also like to hear from you guys, so if you have any critiques on the show, we want to hear from you. Also, in regards to the podcast, if you like this, please, if you could give us a like, share, comment, subscribe, rate, anything like that, it's very appreciated on all of the platforms that we're on. We're on iTunes, Stitcher, SoundCloud, soon to be Spotify, correct?
Yep.
We're on YouTube. I think Buju's still working on compiling all of these videos to mass upload them.
Yup.
So the one guy that comments on our YouTube videos, if you come back after this, will probably end up being a 3-month hiatus. We appreciate you. And I want to hear your thoughts.
Is that it? Did you cover it?
Yeah, I think so.
You had a random question you wanted to ask.
Yeah, I do. So this is totally off...
off the reservation, as they say.
Yeah, nothing to do with MMA. Does anyone have any non-MMA things they want to bring up?
Go ahead.
Okay. So, XFL is obviously going on.
Yep.
Viewership is down.
Yep.
I mean, double digits per week, it seems, are dropping. Correct? Is that give or take what's happening?
It wasn't as big of a drop-off from week 3 to 4, but from week 1 to 2 to 3 were big drop-offs.
Okay. So, I mean, it's still dropping off steadily.
Yeah.
And so, business might potentially be in trouble, correct?
Mm-hmm.
And there's a marquee free agent quarterback in the NFL in Tom Brady.
Oh, not a fucking chance.
That's not where I thought you were going. I thought you were going to say Jameis.
I thought you were going to say Manziel.
Oh, no, definitely
which is
not.
Crazy. Johnny Manziel's not in the XFL,
it is
by
crazy,
the way.
But he's also trash. But, I mean,
fucking Landry
Jones? I'm not disagreeing with you. Could Tom Brady single-handedly save the XFL with viewership and ratings?
Yes.
Just him?
Well, at least, yes.
As long as he plays.
His games, yeah.
Mm-hmm. Because, I mean, you can't, if you are smart, you try to sandwich him in the middle and try to get people to watch a game before and after his,
yeah.
I think. But do you think that he alone could save the XFL from potentially, and how much money do you pay Brady to play in the XFL?
I think what you would have to pay him would offset the fucking gain you get.
I think if you stay in business, it works out to your advantage in the long run. Because that's ultimately what you're trying to do, is to establish yourself as a legitimate minor league of sorts for football.
To me, at this point, I thought the after week one, I thought the XFL, if anybody was ever going to do it, and I still think this, if anybody was ever going to do it, it was going to be this league. Because what you need is decent football, and it is pretty good football. And it's still not working. So I just don't think there's ever going to be an alternative league. I don't know if there's ever going to be a secondary pro league to the NFL. The CFL does okay because it's in Canada and they have their little niche, but I don't think we're ever going to see another legitimate secondary pro football league in the U.S.
Brendan,
I think
thoughts?
This was the best shot, and they're floundering right now. Maybe they figured out, maybe it comes back a little bit, but it doesn't look great.
Tom Brady definitely has the capabilities of bringing the XFL back to life.
The problem is, it's a 1-year deal. He's only going to play another year.
Man, he could play till he's 50 in the XFL.
Yeah, that's true. That's fair.
But there's definitely a 0% chance it happens. And just going off just this topic, I also think it's absolutely crazy that there's all these rumors going around that he isn't returning to the Patriots, because I definitely thought he 100% was going to. So it's kind of crazy. And it also seems that...
And I'm back. I think he's going back to the Patriots now, for the record.
You do?
Yeah. You didn't see the thing with him and Edelman where they were at the Syracuse basketball game, and Edelman's saying he's coming back. And now Edelman's selling shirts that says Brady's coming back or something like that. Edelman would know, and Brady's coming back.
I disagree, because Tom Brady's face after he said that looked extremely annoyed, and also Edelman
wanted to make his own decision.
Him and Edelman also talked to Vrabel.
Yeah, but I mean, they were teammates with Vrabel. That doesn't mean a ton to me.
I think the way I read seen that as Edelman and Tom is a package deal.
I think he's kind of...
What a horrible package deal.
Yeah, it depends where you go. I mean, Edelman's definitely not what he used to be.
He's the perfect
with Tom Brady.
He's the perfect fit for the Titans. If the Titans can get him, I mean, that's ideal for them. But I think he's coming back to the Patriots.
I hope so. I want him to win a ship.
I kind of want him to go somewhere else just for the fun of it.
Yeah, just go to...
See what Belichick can do without Brady. The Patriots have new quarterbacks. See what Brady does. He goes somewhere else. I think that's...
Yeah,
think
it'll that's prove the system quarterback claims or not.
I'm not a fan of it because Brady's not going to be good elsewhere, and then people are going to rag on Brady. I'm not
but what if
like
he
that.
Is?
Yeah.
Huh?
What if he's fantastic?
I feel like...
What if he has an MVP? What if he wins MVP?
That would be crazy. He does Brett Favre had the best year of his career with the fucking Vikings.
Yeah, because he had like a couple speed demons to just wing it down the field to.
Percy Harvin.
Love it.
Yeah, I don't like the argument that he's a system quarterback, but if he goes into a whole new system at this late in his career...
Sounds like a system quarterback.
And I feel like no matter where he goes, it's most likely a less talented team than the Patriots.
To me, the system quarterback thing, it doesn't even matter. You still have to be a good quarterback in the fucking system.
Yeah,
I agree. I can't go you can't plug me into the system and the Patriots win 12 games. It doesn't fucking happen. You still have to be a good quarterback.
But he also can't throw fucking... He's not going to throw fucking verticals all the time. He has to have slants. He has to have...
He's 59 years old.
Yeah, might as well be.
So...
And then back to the XFL thing. As much as everybody else is lesser talent, so it makes Brady shine, the offensive line is also lesser talent, too.
Yeah.
So that's a factor, too, when he's 49 and a half years old.
Mm-hmm.
So
I thought that was just a fun little question. Hypothetical of sorts.
I think I had a question related, but I don't remember what it was now. But it's crazy that the XFL isn't getting every fucking... name from college that didn't make it to the NFL.
That 100% should.
Tebow, Manziel,
mm-hmm.
fucking, what was the gay kid from Missouri? Michael something?
Sam?
Michael Sam, yep, get him. Get everybody who's ever been a name that didn't make it in the NFL.
Yeah, just throw him on there.
Brock Lesnar. but yeah, fun talking football. That was our thing for a while, was talking to other sports at the end of the show.
It was.
We got away from it. I enjoy talking sports.
Yeah, I'm sure that because now I'm back and we're going to get some food together, we'll talk more about sports after this podcast.
What triggered your fast food expedition through the greater South Bend area for Saturday?
Well,
I tried the Popeye's chicken sandwich.
Oh.
You tried...
Wendy's breakfast. And I ended up the day with a papadilla from Papa John's. breakfast because I had planned on it. Lunch because my dad and I had planned on it after puppy class.
Mm-hmm. After puppy class.
Oh, yeah. Got a puppy Rottweiler, and after we drop him off from a long hour of him learning to behave, we go and get fat.
You have to reward yourself after fucking dealing with that dog.
It's so...
Hellish piece of shit.
Oh, he's not that bad.
Are you done?
And then we ended up with a papadilla because we were going to make chili, but then we didn't make chili, and so we just ordered papadillas. And my dad wanted to try it. So two-thirds of it, not on me.
Thoughts on the KFC donut chicken sandwich?
I haven't tried it, if that's what you're asking.
No, thoughts.
I don't think my hands would be sticky. The last few times I've been in a KFC, my feet were sticky.
Yeah.
I have zero interest in ever paying or going to a KFC again in my life.
The two closest KFCs to us are not of the highest quality, which is a problem. The idea of the sandwich, I'm down to try anything, whatever. It's fucking goofy, I'll try it. I forgot to try the bacon sundae when fucking Burger King had them, and I've been kicking myself for 7 years. But yeah, It's not something I'm like, hell yeah, donuts and fucking chicken, bro. Give me some of that shit. But I'd try it. What the hell? Yeah.
I mean, I would try it if it was free, but I won't. I'll never purchase it. And it doesn't sound appealing. Donut and chicken, those don't
mix. I mean, chicken well. And waffles.
I'm also not a chicken and waffles guy. I've never had chicken
and waffles. I just know that some people like that sweet, savory mix.
I've never had chicken and waffles, but there's this place in Vegas where it's a chicken sandwich, but the bun basically is waffles, and you put syrup on there. Oh my fucking god! It's unbelievably good.
That's basically chicken and waffles, just sandwich form.
But goddamn, it's good.
I just don't think the combinations of breakfast and lunch should mix together. Crispy chicken with the sweet.
That's another thing. The fact that we've accepted fucking donuts as breakfast. How did that happen? It's dessert.
I feel like I'm much more likely to get a donut for breakfast than I am to get one after I eat dinner.
I know, but it's
dessert.
Saying,
it was originally meant for dessert.
No, I'm just it's sweet. It's usually got like chocolate or fucking cream filling or sprinkles on it. How did somebody look at that and go, "This is what we're gonna eat in the morning when we first wake up? We're gonna have a fucking donut."
Yeah, the most important meal of the day is gonna be the most unhealthiest meal you can ever have.
That's crazy.
Have a crash 3 hours later. That's why you gotta get the chicken for KFC.
Granted, I guess like fucking French toast, waffles, pancakes, and crepes are all kind of desserty too.
Not only is donuts extremely unhealthy, but it's extremely unfilling, so you have to eat so much, Steven.
Oh, I could eat a dozen donuts in a fucking heartbeat, son.
It depends what kind of donut, but...
Glazed? Who's eating glazed donuts?
Glazed kind of donuts is better than chocolate. What
kind of donuts you eating a dozen of then, friend?
Chocolate with sprinkles, bitch.
I don't like sprinkles.
You put sprinkles on top of chocolate?
What?
That's awful.
You're acting like that's crazy.
That's fucking absurd.
Sprinkles are for winners, motherfucker.
It's not absurd at all.
Icing and sprinkles, okay.
Yeah, that's what I think you're saying. You're saying like a regular donut with a chocolate frosting? Yeah.
But even chocolate, I don't know.
I think that's kind of the generic donut. It is. Chocolate with sprinkles on it.
I think that's a piece of shit donut. I think
you're a piece of shit.
I think real men eat glazed donuts.
You're talking about just a plain Krispy Kreme brown with glaze on it.
Yeah, glazed.
Get the fuck out of my face. What am I, a 3-year-old?
Glazed donuts are better than chocolate donuts.
I think my go-to...
You don't like chocolate, motherfucker?
I think if you like glazed donuts, you like orange juice. If you like chocolate donuts, you like apple juice. And you're wrong... and you're wrong in both arguments, because it's obviously glazed donuts and orange juice that is superior.
What a food analogy!
That's the dumbest fucking thing I've ever heard in my life.
That's why people listen to us.
Oh, we gotta end it there.
That was my goodness.
If you like glazed donuts, you like orange juice. If you like chocolate donuts, you like apple juice.
Reasonable take.
Oh, fuck. I do like orange juice and chocolate donuts, for the record. I counter your argument. This was the Untitled MMA Podcast. Nope, that's not it.
That is not it at all.
For Brendan, for Bryce, I'm Buju. This was the Untitled MMA Podcast, and
it's a wrap.
Wow, that was loud.